Okay, thank you for joining us today. Today we are speaking with Stefan Ruoff, who is Deputy Head of ILS at the Specialist Insurance Linked Securities Investment Manager, Schroder Sequeiro. Stefan, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you and being part of this range of interviews. I've seen the one with Paul, the one with Nafila, and the one with PCS. They were quite nice.
Good, good. Glad you like them. So hopefully, I'm sure you'll be just as popular. So I guess probably would be correct of us to begin by talking about the current global situation. Obviously, we're in the middle of a pandemic, which has caused a significant shift in working practices and how people are now interacting within the marketplace. So I thought it'd be interesting to hear how Schroder Sequeiro is coping at this time.
For me personally, it's almost a deja vu. I've lived in Taipei, Taiwan back into 2003 when the SARS epidemic broke out. At that time, I was quarantined for the first time in my life. Back then, obviously, technology was not that advanced. But when we started to see the outbreak earlier in China and then spreading over, actually, I was reminded of what happened back then. What we did not anticipate is that it's a global pandemic that would then spread out. And when you look back over the last 3 months, it's quite interesting how we looked at China and, let's say, not really being in a position to evaluate what it eventually could mean for every one of us. Actually, we started to look at some of the bonds that the World Bank had brought up. But then when things, let's say, became, let's say, more virulent and pushed closer with the cancellation of events and then people not coming to conferences like CIFMA end of February, beginning of March. And then over time, client visits were cancelled and turned into video meetings, actually. I think everyone started to realize, oops, this is really something very new to all of us. I have to say, the Schroders team has coped very well. There was a BCP in place that's never been really tested before. It worked well, and it's still working well. We have everyone remote now. Since more than 6 weeks, the team is fully operational. The Schroders platform globally is working very well, and the ILS platform in itself is coping. I sometimes even think it's an interesting moment because you start people working with their families around them, and funny things happen because no one is used to that. Your kids jump into a meeting while you're having a meeting. But that gives the whole thing a lot of human touch, which I think is important in these times.
Sure, sure. I think one of the really interesting things for me has been the way large, actually enormous organizations with global operations have adjusted so quickly. It's actually been very impressive to see, particularly in an industry like ours where the industry sort of thrives on the human interaction and how quickly people have taken that virtual.
Couldn't agree more, actually. The interesting, let's say, layer that I felt was not taken up for long was the realization how big the exposure can eventually become. And I think this took the industry longer than I expected, especially having seen other, let's say, viruses spread out. But as these have never really hit the US or Europe in a real strong way as we have it now, I think that exposure that emanates from this pandemic took a while to get really understood. We had an early discussion with Dirk Lohmann, who is my counterpart, on what it can eventually mean, and so now what we see, I think, is a real test for the industry.
Absolutely, yeah. That's actually evident in the early Q1 results that we're covering at the moment. There's a lot of people making big reserve judgments, but without a huge amount of data behind them. and a lot of uncertainty, and then other companies who really aren't making any attempt to quantify the exposure at this time, which is understandable as well. It's certainly going to be a challenging one for the industry to come up with a loss quantum at some point in the future. So the catastrophe bond market has been an interesting space in recent weeks, obviously, and we've seen certain types of investors looking to exit or downsize their holdings and seeing cat bonds as a good liquid opportunity for selling positions at a reasonable value. But obviously for specialists like yourselves at Schroders and Schroders Aquero, have you been finding opportunities to actually deploy into that marketplace?
We definitely have, actually. Interesting enough, what you just described, one of my colleagues said, yeah, we're like the ATM for the financial markets in some way, actually, because indeed we're liquid. We have not been had huge impact. But yes, we have been, and traditionally Schroders Aquero has been a large player in the bond space. So the secondary market trading has offered indeed good opportunities, especially towards the end of March when markets were still quite volatile. We have usually a very strong liquidity position, and that helped us, let's say, to trade in a number of instances, which helped us also to enhance the portfolios that we run for our investors. So there was an interesting moment in time, but I think that the window was not that long, and I really liked your interview with Paul Schulz from Aon Securities, who described the evolution of the cat bond market in a very, very good way. Because what we see today is that we switched very quickly from a secondary market focus back to a primary market focus, with now, let's say, four or five transactions being out. One has just been closed. Four are still in the placing. So really, I was surprised to see how quickly the market was able to move back to, let's say, providing capacity to new deals or to deals that had matured and are now reissued. So that was good to see.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's been an impressive switch and an important one as well, that people have clearly been saving some firepower to make sure that the primary issuance gets out, because as we all know, there's such a huge amount of maturities coming, and a lot of sponsors who rely on cat bond capacity as part of their reinsurance programs. What's the view there on the primary issuance that has come to market so far? Are you surprised at all with the pricing or anything, or do you think that's a natural reaction to market conditions?
I think that there are a few elements in there. I think the secondary market trading with the spread widening that we saw has somehow led the way to what was to come on the primary side as well. So from what we see today, and probably one bond that had been withdrawn end of March from the market and now has come back to the market with a higher or a better pricing is a good sign of a hardening market overall. The hardening market is certainly not just driven by capacity, it's also driven by the underlying reinsurance, let's say, improvements that we see on a broader scale. So that's the second element I think I would count into it. Now, with bonds that we see right now, indeed pricing goes up, becomes even more attractive, and I think when I look at our portfolios, we haven't seen yield levels of that significance in probably a number of years, actually. So I think it's a good opportunity for investors, but it also shows, as you said, resilience of this market.
Yeah, no, I think again I'd agree that there's certainly an opportunity right now for investors who are looking to deploy into asset classes that have proved their stability through a crisis. The ILS asset class has yet again sort of upped its return expectations, it seems, and that presents a potentially very attractive entry point for investors right now, I would say.
Yeah, and it's probably worthwhile adding that not only it's an interesting moment to move in, I think we will certainly probably talk a little bit more about this later, the exposure to the cat bond side of the ILS market from a BI imposed claims perspective is very limited, if almost inexistent, actually, as you have very clearly defined perils, you have very clearly defined triggers, and you do not face a lot of probably, let's say, the issues that are currently discussed on the collateralized re side. I think the only exception probably one has to make is the life bond side, actually. Obviously, the two World Bank issuances have been most likely been triggered. So these are areas I think one has to take out when you discuss cat bond portfolios. But if we stick to the non-life cat bond world, I think your assessment is completely right.
There's another interesting factor, I think, coming through as well. Given the losses of the last few years, there seems to be a bit of a shift back towards per occurrence structures over aggregate as well so far this year in issuance, which is interesting to note too, and also potentially good for the overall investment opportunity, as it's perhaps more understandable for some investors that way.
That is a very good point, and I think it doesn't stop at the cat bond space. I think also in the retro space, we have seen, let's say, a step back towards a way more clearly structured retro programs, away from aggregate structures or layered aggregate structures, and that has helped the retro market to become an accessible market again for investors, I think, as well. So we have, for example, shifted some capacity back into the retro space because the reason you mentioned was there, that we see structures that are occurrence based, that are clearly defined and accessible in terms of explanation to the investors what risk is put against the capital.
That's potentially a very positive thing for investors in the private ILS strategies that you run there at Schroder Sequeira as well. Obviously, that side of the market perhaps has a little more uncertainty associated with the pandemic, given some of the ongoing issues and developments around business interruption.
I would agree, and I would not limit it to business interruption. I think the ILS market has gone broad, obviously, in some areas, and if you look at mortgage related ILS, if you look at trade credit, where we have seen ILS moving in small, but still, if we see, as you said, commercial exposures with BI coming along, so these are indeed areas that are certainly more exposed than the cat bond side of things that we discussed earlier. And here, I think one has to really look at individual portfolios very closely, because my belief and our belief is that we will see a huge difference in the way ILS structures will respond in different areas, actually, and ILS portfolios and their construction will also respond to what's happening.
Yes, it seems one of these issues that's going to come down to structure and wording largely, and there's certainly seems to be, even within a very niche or a specific area of the ILS market, like the sidecar market, there seems to be great differences from one sponsor's sidecar to another in terms of the potential for a hit from COVID-19 and any associated business interruption, or even potentially included claims in some cases, I understand, as well.
Bespoke portfolios that provide cover for business interruption possibly are exposed indeed and will pay claims, and they should pay claims because they were designed to do that, actually. So I think, this is also part of the discussion. One should not forget our industry is there to pay claims if they're valid claims made and they're provided through the policy that's been issued. But I think the point you're making is a good one. I think in order to properly evaluate the impact at the end of the day, I think one has to work through what type of instrument are we looking at, what is the scope of coverage that we provide, what is the nature of the trigger, what is the definition of the event, and what is the underlying portfolio that we are reassuring or retroceding? Is that underlying portfolio a homeowner's portfolio, a private lines portfolio, a commercial portfolio? So, and only by going through every piece of the puzzle, I think you will really start to understand how a given portfolio may or may not be exposed and to what extent. By the way, this is what we're doing, and interestingly, we're doing it based on the valuation grid that we use internally to evaluate our positions every month, which gives a lot of consistency to the whole
Absolutely,
thing.
Absolutely, yeah, it's another good one for the valuation experts, that this will provide research and help people probably improve their valuations and make them even more timely in future, because people are having to make decisions right now on portfolios that are potentially not backed by the level of information you would normally get with a natural catastrophe, for example.
Yeah.
So we have... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking about one more point you mentioned on the quota share and sidecar, let's say, relationships that are within the ILS market. And I think you're right in mentioning these, because they're obviously... We have a wide range of quota shares and sidecars. Actually, there could be those where you team with a reinsurer on a, let's say, relatively high layer structure where the exposure might be rather minor, or you have partnerships that focus more on, let's say, cover holder business or E&S business, where you may have commercial exposure coming into the quota share sidecar. And then probably the impact might be a different one than from the other example, actually. So what we have started to do is we don't have too many sidecars in our portfolio, but for those we have, we are engaging proactively with the partners and go through portfolio discussions in a quite detailed way in order to understand the underlying policies, the portfolios, so that we can communicate with our investors very clearly what they may or may not expect out of these parts of the portfolio that we build.
Yeah, that's a very positive step to take, as investors are looking for information at this time, I think. So if we move forward, obviously we've got one of the most important renewals of the year for the ILS market coming up in a couple of months. Obviously everyone's expecting, or where everyone was expecting, rates to improve prior to the coronavirus pandemic breaking out and going global, but now it seems the message from a lot of the big underwriting companies is that they're certainly going to be pushing for even more rate firming. I mean, so how are you guys viewing this? Is this a great opportunity for collateralized markets to build a larger portfolio potentially?
I think, again, we have to put this into the context of a wider development, which started at the 1-1 renewals already. And I mentioned earlier the retro space that has redefined to some extent. That went then on with probably the headline renewal in Japan at 1-4 that already showed quite significant improvements, hardening, and changes. And now we're let's say, as we speak, in the Florida renewals that are, ramping up, and we've, I think, 4 weeks left to go. And we do see, indeed, the momentum continuing that you described, that there's a hardening, there's a push for better terms and conditions. So is that a huge opportunity to ramp up? The way we look at it is usually we think about risk commensurate pricing, actually. So is the risk that is offered transferred at the price that is adequate and creating the returns we want to see for the investors we have? So clearly there are areas where we see it. Japan, for example, has become for us an investment in a more broader way than it has been before. As I said, we shifted some capacity to the retro space. I'm not yet convinced about the Florida renewals, so to be very honest. And it's early days. We've not been a major player in the Florida space as such, because we never felt that over the last few years Florida paid appropriately in broader terms. Add to that terms and conditions that were, let's say, difficult, the LAE question that's always been out there. So, indeed, we're now looking at a number of submissions, what we not did before. And if we do see, let's say, pricing to come to a point where we believe it is risk commensurate, we would deploy indeed capacity into the Florida market. Would we grow massively? I don't think so. We haven't seen huge outflows from our portfolio, to be honest, but we haven't seen also huge inflows over the last few months. And I think investors remain at the moment very cautious with the ILS asset class, not to say what we mentioned earlier about the ATM function, so that liquidity is also part of the equation.
It's certainly going to be an interesting renewal from the point of view of having to right size sort of opportunity plus capital and getting that match correct this time around, because as you noted, it may not be the easiest period for raising additional capital, so you need to make sure you're putting your existing capital to work in the best possible way. And you mentioned terms and conditions there as well. Is this something you expect to be an increasing feature of renewals? I mean, we discussed aggregate versus per occurrence, but obviously there's pandemic exclusions and other factors as well, and terms and conditions have really stretched dramatically, I guess, in the last decade. Is this an opportunity that potentially the market tightens those back a little bit again?
I think the market will tighten it back, yes, and we start seeing that. I think my view has always been that blanket statements do not help anyone in a big way, actually. I think every submission, every deal, every contract needs to look at separately, individually, in its own context, actually. If you have a well-defined wording already today that limits the risk transfer to a named peril, which is clearly defined, I'm not sure if you need to add an exclusion to something that's never been covered. So that's just to illustrate that I think one needs to go into a renewal with a clear understanding, okay, what we want to achieve is we want to provide risk transfer from one balance sheet to another balance sheet. And along the way, obviously, it needs to work for those who get rid of the risk and those who accept the risk. And everyone has to be clear what risk is transferred. At the same time, if we are representing investors, we need to be transparent and to be able to explain to the investor what risk is going against his capital. So to make sure, hence, that's why I'm saying I think every case needs to be looked at. And obviously, yes, there will be a drive to harder terms and conditions. However, we would not go out and say, hey, blanket statements, this is what we need, and if we don't have this, we don't work with you. So hopefully I'm not too, too much against my own market at the moment, but I think one has to go individually with every client and every broker.
That makes sense. So I guess briefly, let's talk quickly about the life ILS side of things, which obviously Schroder Sequeira manages a fairly large portfolio in that space as well. Is this an area you're expecting to see any impacts at all, aside from the World Bank bond on, I guess, private life ILS transactions?
So we mentioned the World Bank part, and we know about it. It's out publicly, so we no need to speak about it. So we're watching the life ILS developments very, very closely, and mostly at the moment, we look at extreme mortality and some extended morbidity, let's say transfer solutions. From what we see at the moment, and we have deals with attachment levels that are very, very high. So we haven't seen any loss to any of the contracts we have in place. And at the moment, we are quite remote or far away from any of these trigger points. At the same time, we also do see uncertainty increasing. Uncertainty in terms of where are we going to go? And uncertainty is certainly driven by looking at key markets being the US, obviously, but also the UK, maybe Australia, where, let's say, risk transfer solutions for extreme mortality can be found. Here, when we look at these markets, we have obviously political decisions that drive to some extent what's going to happen in the next few weeks and months. This is creating uncertainty, and political interaction at the moment is not the same in the US, in the UK, or elsewhere. Hence, every country needs to be looked at also individually. In that sense, modeling any scenario is a hugely difficult task with a lot of uncertainty. I think you can model any outcome at the moment by playing with parameters that you get from immunologists, that you get from politicians, that you get from Johns Hopkins, that you get from other data sources. All that to say, for us, the interaction with the partners on the risk transfer side, i.e. the counterparties, is very close. At the moment, we are not worried in any way or form, but I just think this uncertainty that basically is out there, and what if we're going to have a second wave after now going into a phase of, let's say, loosening, let's say, lockdowns a bit everywhere, is something we can't really predict. Hence, I would say it's almost a fascinating side of things to look at the life developments. At the same time, it's something unprecedented, so difficult
to
predict.
That's a really interesting point, because it potentially also applies to property portfolios as well, that a second wave could result in a second wave of BI claims for insurers, and how does their coverage respond, and how would reinsurance coverage respond to that? It's, as you say, it's a particularly uncertain situation right now. And the political situation is another very good point, because, as we all know, that's an uncertain situation for a lot of us these days. Look, I don't want to take up too much of your time today, and that's been a really interesting and insightful chat, so I appreciate you sparing me some time, Stefan. That's very kind of you. So I think with that, I'll let you go and just say thank you very much, and hope to catch up with you soon.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully see you soon. Thanks.